Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
Jared Hutch, known as the Monk, or Jerry Hutch, has been arrested in Spain on foot of a European arrest warrant. The 58-year-old is currently in Spanish custody. It is believed that he was detained in Fuengirola on the Costa del Sol, and Gardaí believe he had been moving between Spain, where he has a home, and other European countries. His extradition was sought by the Garda team in Ballymun, which has been investigating the murder of David Byrne at the Regency Hotel back in February 2016. And the 34-year-old Kinahan organised crime group member was shot dead at a boxing weigh-in by a gang of armed men dressed as Gardaí. One was actually dressed as a woman, if you remember that particular story at the time. And back in July, Gardaí served book of evidence on four men, including a former Sinn Féin councillor, who are charged in connection with the murder. A file on the case was submitted to the Director of Public Prosecutions, who then applied to the High Court for a European arrest warrant for Jerry Hutch. Irish Independent journalist Paul Williams joins me on the line to give me a little bit more about it. Crime journalist and author of the book On the Monk that was published last year. Paul, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Niall. Good to talk to you.
Now, Paul, well, first of all, Jerry Hutch, right? I mean, the only thing really most of us know about Jerry Hutch is what we saw in the Veronica Guerin movie. And he was romanticised as this ordinary, decent criminal or this nice guy of criminality. I mean, what is Jerry Hutch like or who is he?
Well, as I, in the book, the strapline of the book was The Monk, The Life and Crimes of Ireland's Most Enigmatic Gang Boss. And I've been chronicling his life story since the 80s. And he, the word enigmatic is the one that always stuck out in my mind about him. He was certainly, a rarity in gangland. He's certainly very much an unprecedented character in many ways. He did... And this doesn't glorify him in any way. And you have to understand the sort of the concept of organized crime and how it operates. And I say this, that he was considered to be the last of a so-called breed called ordinary thief, as in guys who did not go around butchering people.
Yes, he was nothing along the lines of the general or any of those individuals. Yeah,
he didn't go looking for trouble. He didn't go trying to create problems. He carried out big armed robberies. He stayed away from the drug trade largely, although in the background he was an investor in various deals and stuff like that. But he stayed out of all of that. He didn't go around looking for trouble. He didn't throw his weight around. He was always a very pragmatic, strategic kind of character. He lived a very clean life, kept himself fit, didn't smoke, didn't drink very much until recent years. He ran and helped finance a boxing club, the Corinthians, in the North Inner City, which was a great assistance to the community, trying to keep kids away from trouble. And in fact, it's very difficult for you to find anyone in the North Inner City, in his old neighbourhood, the Hutch neighbourhood, to say a bad word about him.
Yeah.
Having said all of that, he is at the moment incarcerated in a cell in Spain, awaiting extradition to face charges connected to one of the most outrageous and audacious acts of narco-terrorism we have ever seen in this country. And the pictures of that are etched in everybody's mind.
Well, the videos, of course, we've all seen the videos as well. I mean, these are the videos where the Gardaí, well, we thought it was Gardaí, and a woman, who we thought was a woman, of course, a man with a wig on, went in and opened fire on members of the public.
With AK-47s. But in fact, even within that, it showed a degree of... It was what you call a spectacular in terrorism terms. But it was also exceptionally well organized. And I'll tell you how and why. And this is in absolutely no way to in any way justify it. But in terms of the discipline shown by those killers that went into that hotel that day, they picked out one member of the Kinahan cartel. They didn't actually open fire indiscriminately on the audience. It didn't hit any innocent people, which, you know, they won't be using that in mitigation when they're going down, if they're convicted in the Special Criminal Court down the road. But it did illustrate a degree of how focused and disciplined it was, which is very much the characteristics of everything Hutch did in his life. Now, it was a spectacular miscalculation. It was one of the biggest, it was the biggest mistake this man has ever made in his life. He had retired from criminality and now...
That's right, he was driving a taxi, of course. Well, he was doing Debs. Yeah.
He'd done that years ago. Yeah. He'd quit all that.
He had finished that.
Yeah, he was living in Spain, living the high, a good life, a quiet life, and keeping his head down because he had loads of money. He's invested it very, very well at the Dublin.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, Paul. I mean, was he wealthy at that stage? Now, I know he paid the revenue a large sum of money at one stage. Then
the gig had 1.2 million.
That's right. Yeah. And then he ended up in court because he was being denied a taxi license. And I remember the story at the time. I was working at another radio station. It was on the news at the time that the court had ruled in his favour. They couldn't deny him a right to earn a living. So he got his taxi license. And then he bought the big, one of those big limos.
The big stretch limo. Yeah,
the stretch limo for doing the debs. So he seemed to be, you know, going down the road of being, you know, the guy and hanging up the life of crime and moving on with his life. But did he have much money at that stage?
Oh, he very wealthy man, yeah, because he invested very cleverly. Like, you know, the reality was with the cab in those days, their strategy was that, you know, you get money out of these guys, you don't completely and absolutely impoverish them. They always have a few bob left somewhere. He had a lot of property interests right across, Europe. He'd love property, a lot of property here in the UK. So he's quite a wealthy dude. He made a lot of money. Remember, he robbed something at the equivalent of 13 million euros in today's money. Apart from, I think it was 300 or 400,000 pounds of that seized.
Well, of course, he would deny that, by the way, can I point out? You know, he will deny that.
Oh, he was always denied it, yeah. Like, I think we've gone well past that with Jerry, and Jerry knows that himself. I have
heard some very funny interviews with him, by the way, because he's a very clever man with words.
He's very clever, but that makes you think as well, though. I'm perplexed by it because I do think I understand his psychology, and I've been in his shadow and on his shoulder for over 30 years.
Did you ever talk to him?
But I did, several times. Yeah, but I find it astonishing that a man of his intelligence and supposed ability to disappear. He disappeared in April when it came out that the European arrest warrant had been issued here for his to bring him back on to extradite him back here for to face the charge of murdering Dave Byrne. The fact that he was found in Fungarola, it's a bit like you going to ground and still hanging around the 4FM.
I know what you mean.
It doesn't make any sense. And like he's well and well and truly caught.
Is the net, Paul, closing in on all of this organised crime? Of course, that particular incident in the Regency Hotel was the start of many murders because, of course, you had the whole family feud between Hutch and Kinahan. So, I mean, is the net closing in on them all now?
Well, the net is closing in on these guys. The net is not closing in on organised crime. These are the most prominent briars or nettles that are growing up in your garden. And what we're doing in the process at the moment is cutting them down. The problem with organised crime is that's what it is at the moment. You cut the weeds down, but you never get to the roots of them, and they will continue to grow at a ferocious rate, as we can see. The country's flooded with drugs, and a lot of people prospering from it. But these guys, this war, what happened between these two tribes, let's remind your listeners, 2015, Gary Hutch, Jerry's nephew was shot dead on the orders of Daniel Kinahan in Spain. But that was Kinahan reneging on a deal he did, a face-to-face deal with Jared Hutch in 2014 to save the life of Gary Hutch, because Gary Hutch was an integral part of Kinahan's organisation, but fell out with him, pulled a stroke, got a guy to go along and shoot Daniel Kinahan, shot an innocent man instead. Then they put out a contract on him, he's dead. But the point is that he was part of what's called gangland royalty. These guys live in a different world to us. I'm not accrediting them as that this is normal or anything, but this is the way they think and the way they carry on. He was gangland royalty because he was a Hutch, so therefore they had to negotiate. Otherwise, they would have just whacked him straight away. So they did a deal, and the deal was the compensation was paid, that Gary Hutch keeps head down and keep his mind, stay well away from them. But they didn't let him off the hook, and a year later they reneged on the deed, killed him. The most significant thing after that, the most shocking thing, that the big shock I've had since Veronica Guerin was murdered, was when on New Year's Eve we got word that two hitmen had been dispatched from Dublin to shoot dead Jerry Hutch in a bar in Lanzarote on the orders of Daniel Kinahan. That was
unprecedented.
That was unprecedented, but everybody was writing about that at the time here, saying this is the start of something big. And everybody who knew Hutch would know that something else is going to happen. And then we saw it in the Regency, that meticulously planned but outrageous act of narco-terrorism, which then, as you said, unleashed unmerciful bloodshed and savagery on the streets of Dublin. But I think the proper figure is 14 of the 15 subsequent deaths after the murder of David Byrne in the 2 years were carried out by the Kinahans, who went to basically wipe out the Hutches. And in that process, Gerry Hutch's brother Eddie was shot dead, who Eddie was his closest sibling and was his mentor growing up. His three sons are dead, and two of his best friends were also assassinated. So, and he left the country very quickly after that. As I said, it was a spectacular miscalculation. But he's been on the run now since 2016. He had been keeping his head down very, very well. He had been moving around. But then when the hint of this file, there was a file sent by the Gardaí in Ballymun to the DPP late last year recommending that Hutch be charged with murder and other offences, which are probably like conspiracy to murder, attempted murder, possession of firearms, stuff like that, leading a criminal gang. When the decision came back from the DPP earlier this year, say February, March, I think the Spanish started watching them and getting ready for the time that they'd lift them. But he got tipped off some stage in the beginning of April and he disappeared. And he also at the same time, they started tweeting about aspects of the criminal investigation into the Regency and attacking.
And why do you think, why do you think he stayed there? I mean, a man, as you say, who has plenty of money, no shortage of money, he could probably relocate to any country where they didn't have the ability to extradite him. Why do you think he stayed there?
I really don't know. It makes absolutely no sense at all, unless he had just arrived back.
Because where is Kinahan at the moment? Whereabouts is Daniel Kinahan?
But he's in Dubai. We know
Dubai, yeah, yeah, okay.
He's in Scotland.
He's still there, okay, he's still in Dubai.
And he
okay.
can't really leave there. In fact, he will be very nervous as a result of this, because just like Hutch, I've been saying to people all day, you know, the wheels of justice grind dreadfully slowly, but they do, once they start grinding, they do not stop. And it is relentless. The same thing is going to happen to Kinahan. But mark my word, if I never predicted anything else, Kinahan will be back here, I would say, in the next few years, mm-hmm. because there's huge efforts made to take him back. And the net point about this is at the end of the day is this. You know, the two crews went to war with each other. But what they do whenever they go to war was they inflict absolute terror on the ordinary society, and they threaten the legitimacy of the state, and they threaten to undermine the rule of law, because these guys decided they want to start killing each other.
But they did undermine the rule of law.
And they did. But
absolutely.
That's why there is this absolute obdurate determination to bring Gerry Hutch back. And it's also the same determination behind what's going on.
But I mean, we had the same situation many years ago, of course, in Limerick, where, you know, individuals threatened the rule of law. And of course, that was one of the reasons, of course, that they brought in this idea that you could be set or you could be charged on the testimony of a superintendent. Mm. I mean, and that was for the same reason. So there has been, you know, throughout the last 50 or 60 years, there's been certain individuals that have threatened the rule of law. And I suppose the Garda Síochána and the justice system has to make an example of people and say this can't happen.
Yeah,
and they have to make.
That's why they're all behind bars.
Yeah, well, and efforts have to be made to make sure that people who are well known, and everybody knows these people are involved in crime, that they have to be. That justice has to be served. Otherwise, it just turns into a free for all, I suppose.
But you see, that's the effect of organised crime. Organised crime has got much deeper roots now in our society than ever before. Like, we saw that appalling situation where those three thugs were killed. Driving like lunatics there last month, and you saw that appalling display.
Oh, the display, absolutely. The funeral was outrageous.
And all around that, people just couldn't come out and say what it was, call it for what it was, and perhaps it's too early in the day for me to use the vernacular I would like to use on them. But like, you see, when you see that, the people who were at that funeral, the community that supported those thugs, and especially bringing up to an altar a screwdriver which is used to terrorise and injure decent, innocent and elderly people in their homes and terrorise them, they come from a sort of a subcultural community whereby everything they do is perfectly normal. The problem is, can you imagine trying to rear your kids in the communities where these people live and where this behaviour is normalised?
But isn't that what happens? I mean, we used to use the term years ago, thugs raising thugs. So, but isn't that what happens? When you've got a community which sees no wrong in, and you talk about those funerals and we saw the behaviour of the individuals on their motorbikes and stealing the hearse and all that kind of carry on. When you see that kind of behaviour, it's no wonder wonder these young children of, you know, 9 and 10, particularly young lads, you know, see this behaviour and they think that's normal, and they just, and they aspire to be like their, you know, these older people. Because that's what happens, isn't it?
In some cases, like one time, say 20 years ago, 30 years ago, cohorts in society like that within communities were small. You could identify them. Now you have it spreading like a virus right through the community. And I feel so sorry for the parents trying to rear those kids, trying to keep them on the straight and narrow, trying to keep them away from these thugs and scumbags, because that's all they are.
Of course.
And like, but go back to the Kenan and Hutch feud. All of this is part of the same paradigm. And that is why the only response society has is to take them off the streets and put them behind bars for years. But the problem is, as I said, Niall, the weeds will continue to grow. So they'll have to keep coming out every now and again with the big strimmer and cutting them back. And then you will never get at the roots of it.
Well, they do. Well, all that happens is when these guys go into jail is they pass on the gauntlet. And by the way, and then they operate from jail as well. And we've seen that too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, sure. Killigan was in prison for 17 years. He was moving millions of euros worth of cocaine.
Well, where is he now? Well, the last time I saw was a video of him being arrested. He was arrested as well.
He popped up on the anniversary of Veronica's murder on WhatsApp, as you would do when you're such an unrepentant psychopath. But he is in Spain awaiting trial for possession of a firearm. You may recall this.
That's right, yeah. They found it buried at the side of his house.
And they said it was the exact same make and model, coincidentally, as the one used to murder Veronica, but it wasn't the same weapon, obviously. But he is facing charges for trafficking in drugs and guns. I think the max he can face over there is 5 or 6 years. He gets 15 here, but sometimes over there to give them a present. But having said that, he is an elderly man, 69, he'll be back where he belongs. And it goes to show as well that prison certainly never, ever rehabilitates these guys.
No.
But going back to Jerry Hutch, the thing about Jerry Hutch, really, for me, as the unofficial biographer and somebody who's been chronicling his life, it is a surprise in one way, but unsurprising otherwise, because they all end up going back to what they were about. But he is the last man he was the only man I thought would have actually made it through to die an old man in his sleep, because he was so clever and knew when to get out. And the sins, as he has told his associates, the only reason he got involved in this and came out of retirement was because his family was under attack and he had to protect his family. That's the way he feels, and that's his rationale. I don't think he'd be telling the judges that in the special criminal court.
No.
But he will fight this extradition. It'll only be a couple of months. He'll be back. I'll be on trial in about a year, year and a half. I would say within the next 2 years, we'd be listening and looking at Daniel Kinahan. Maybe in about another 3-4 years now, we could, if we're still alive and if we're still employed, we could still be talking about, the outcome of this case. My God, didn't it take 10 years, but wasn't it worth it in the end? At least they were got.
And by the way, Jerry Hutch, go back to Jerry Hutch. Was Jerry Hutch ever in jail?
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, he was, okay, because there was a suggestion. Yeah, exactly. Somebody suggested to me a while ago he was never actually in jail with anything.
Oh, he did. I was just scanning my book there, and I can't remember exactly, but I think it was 1984.
A long time ago, yeah.
Conviction. He has never been in prison or custody since.
Right.
So he's going back to a changed world there, because he will inevitably be spending time in prison.
But all the little losers in jail will all look up to him. He'll be there like their hero if he did go to jail.
They will look up to him. They will look up to him. And, of course, if they had any brains at all, they'd look up to him and say, Jesus, this is what happens. If this is the cleverest and the most cunning and the most capable of all of us, then, Jesus, there isn't much hope for us. I think it's mature and move on. But
Okay. It's an intriguing story, Paul. And I know you outline a lot of it in the autobiography. And the book is, it's called, it was published last year, by the way. And, what's the name of the book again, Paul? My apologies.
The Monk.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
I didn't call it Niall Boylan.
The Monk, the Life and Crimes of Ireland's Most Enigmatic Gang Boss. Sounds like a good read, because I need to learn a bit more about the man, because I find him intriguing. I mean, he's an intriguing individual, Paul, and we need to learn more about him.
Yeah. I have to admit that I have a bit of a soft spot. Only purely from the point of view that looking at some of the things he did, I'm not talking about his crimes, but some things he did for some people, he did. You have to ask yourself this: why does nobody in the North Inner City have a bad word to say about him? It's very.
Did you, by the way, just finally, did you ever sit down with him and talk face to face to him?
Oh, yeah, I had a pint with him.
And Is, I mean, leaving aside the crimes, you know, that we know he may or may not be responsible for, or, you know, what he is being charged with now and being brought back to Ireland for in the Book of Evidence, what was he like? Is he just salt of the earth? Isn't that a term they use, salt of the earth?
The first time I met him was when they opened Corinthians back in 1998, and I was invited, but it was all orchestrated and choreographed, because as soon as I walked in, I'd just written a book, and I'd done the chapter on him in Gangland, the book called Gangland, and I was invited, but the guards were all there, and they were invited to go. It was an extraordinary event. I described it in the book, but, you know, there were all the local community leaders, politicians, every criminal around the place. It was like an East End. It was like an extra. They all looked like extras from The Craze. And Jerry Hutch and the guards were all there. It was a community effort, criminal, on both sides of the fence, they were all there. But suddenly the crowd parted ways. It was like the strangest thing ever. And there was Jerry Hutch standing with a point of in his hand. And I said, Jesus, and say hello to me and shook hands with me. And I said, how are you doing? How's it going, Jerry? And he said, oh, grand, dude, have a pint. And suddenly I said, have a pint of Heineken. Heineken sort of materialized in my hand within seconds. And then, like, he's a sinister individual. He looked through your soul when he's looking at you. But I said, the first question, I said, Jesus, I thought you didn't drink.
Yeah.
He says, I had the odd one. Oh, that's grand. So then we started talking about the boxing. It was all quite friendly, but the next few times it wasn't quite so friendly. And
yeah, there's an undertone to it, isn't it? You need to stop writing about me, Paul, or else.
Well, I royally pissed him off through the years.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you've pissed off a few people throughout the years, to be honest with you. But anyway, somebody texted in and said, Jerry Hutch was a nice man. He was my mother's landlord in Buckingham Street, Dublin 1. He collected the rent off us and he bought shopping for some of the tenants who were less off.
That's right. That's right, yeah, that's right, absolutely.
Yeah, so charitably he just bought shopping for people, yeah.
Now, at the same time, though, if he came into your house or my house and we're working in a place with an AK-47, he wouldn't have a nice thing to say about him. But that's what I'm saying. that is the inherent contradictions about and the paradox around these characters, you know. Like, for example, this is very important, I think. I've studied this for 30 years in every sense, from a sociological point of view. Jerry Hutch's kids, Jerry Hutch insisted and made sure, and he's the only criminal I can think of that did this ever, that he insisted that his kids stayed away. He brought them out to live in Clontarf, where he was an incongruity, a million miles away from his cultural base in the north inner city. But he brought them to private schools, fee-paying private school, paid for now, in fairness,
yeah,
with the largesse from the various expropriations,
yeah, of course,
banks and stuff around the place. But he kept them on the straight and narrow, to such an extent that they're stand-up
members of the community.
Yeah, but he's the only one that I've ever come across that's done that, and none of those kids have ever featured in crime, and he kept them away from crime. And I always think there is something in that as well. None of this, by the way, mitigates for the horror and the outrage of what happened and what he's been charged with. None of it. But at the same time, it is interesting. It's part of the reason why he sort of character. And his kids are doing really, really well at their chosen careers. Now, in fairness, they use different names and stuff like that, but they're stand-up, yeah, good citizens. And, like, I wouldn't even go into what one of them does, but by God, top of the range in their particular profession.
In their field, yeah. I mean, well, look, that's good to hear. Well, look, I have to go into a break. Well, listen, Paul, it's been very interesting, actually. It's intriguing listening to it. And now I'll have to go and get the book now. So I'm not just giving it a random plug. I think I need to go and read it myself. It's called The Monk, The Life and Crimes of Ireland's Most Enigmatic Gang Boss. And it's by Paul Williams. Listen, Paul, thank you very much indeed. And I appreciate
you're
you coming on the air.
Talking to you, man.
All right, there you go. Paul Williams, that sounds like a really good read, to be honest with you. An absolutely great read, because I find Jerry Hutch to be an intriguing character. When I say I met him, I saw him once. He came into a radio station I was working in once. I can't tell you the reason why, but he came into, it wasn't for an interview, but he came into a radio station I was working for once, which was a very interesting day. And when he walked in, it was like this kind of larger than life character, even though he's quite a small man, by the way. He's not a tall man by any stretch of the imagination, but because you have heard so much about him, and I suppose if you've watched the Veronica Guerin movie, he portrays, or they portray him certainly in the movie and in the books, as this ordinary, decent criminal. A man who never got really involved in drugs or anything like that. He seems to live a reasonably healthy lifestyle. Didn't directly order the killing of anybody, unlike many of the criminals that were around at the time, the general and others that we would have seen around at the time, who were scum. this guy operated almost like the Michael Caine type character, if you know what I mean, in those movies. The clever guy, you know, the guy who would be just in it for the money. And that's the way he was seen and has been seen throughout the years. Well, just to remind you again, he has been arrested. He's been arrested in Spain. He's been kept in custody. And this is on the foot of a European arrest warrant. And a file on the case was submitted to the Director of Public Prosecutions. Back in the Gardaí produced and have served books of evidence on four men, including former Sinn Féin councillor, who were charged in connection with that murder.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.